Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live. This program is recorded.
Well, welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, January 10th, 2017, our first program of the new year. Happy New Year to all of our EMS providers throughout the state. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. Also joining me is Patrick Ryan, Dan Williams, and Larry Knuth. Happy New Year and welcome to another year of EMS Live.
Morning, Joe. Yeah. Thanks.
Morning.
Morning.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Today's program is regarding the Wisconsin Department of Health and the Medicaid program that they have issued to a third-party broker called MTM. We'll be pleased to be joined here a little bit later in the program by the general manager at MTM, Danielle Dale, and the transportation manager, Chris Belling. Before we begin, we always like to just chit-chat about a few of the current topics happening in EMS. And one of those that I was notified about fairly shortly ago, just a few weeks ago, was Dan Williams' announcement with his retirement at Emergency Services of Door County. Dan, do you want to elaborate a little bit on what's happening there and what some of your plans are?
Well, thanks, Joe. I've been in this business a long, long time, 45 plus years, and you get to a point where it's time to do some other things. And I was charged with a few things when I came back, when they lured me out of retirement to come back and help them out here. I think we've accomplished most of those things. So my wife and I chatted, and she says it's time to start traveling. So that was the end of that. And the 12th is my last day.
Well, that's excellent, Dan. Congratulations on your announcement, and surely we look forward to your continuation. I know you'll be working with us here on the podcast every other week, and we surely appreciate you continuing with us on that. I know also you announced plans regarding the Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin Conference. The upcoming conference in September is your 30th anniversary.
Right. This will be our 30th year. So I said I'd go at least that long. 30 years ago, I never thought it would go more than 2 years, but here we are 30 years later, and I think we've put on a good conference for all those years, and we'll see what lies beyond that, but I wanted to at least get to the 30th point.
Well, Dan, thank you for everything that you've done for EMS, 40-year career in the industry, working with several entities. What you've done to contribute back to the industry is most appreciated. So on behalf of the organization, thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you.
You're very welcome. We promised Dan this morning we wouldn't roast him, but we surely wanted to get the applause in. So appreciate that very much. Nice. Say, what's that?
This is Larry. I was going to say nicely done.
Yeah. So, all right, Dan, thank you very much. And we look forward to working with you further. We know this isn't the end, so we look forward to keeping in touch and moving the as I guess we could say, because of the Packer win the other day, we can look forward to keeping to move the ball down the field. So how about
That's right.
Just a quick update, too, on a couple other matters that have been recently brought to our attention here at the association. The Wisconsin EMS office has hired two regional coordinators. The coordinators are based in Madison, and we look forward to a formal announcement from the office here shortly. We'll be sure to share that. Also, the Legislative Study Committee, which convened this past July, and meant monthly up until about November, cast ballots in December for their recommendations for legislation that be pursued by the organization that created them. That would be the Legislative Council. The council is made up of about 25 legislators, and shortly they'll be voting on legislation that was proposed and suggested and recommended by the study committee to the full legislature. We're keeping tabs on that very closely, and we'll be sure to report information regarding that. If you'd like further information on the outcomes from the work the study committee did do, you can refer to the PAW website at paaw.us. Now to our program today. In 2011, the Wisconsin Department of Health decided to discontinue paying ambulance services directly for patient transportation, and that's non-emergency transportation, as a part of the state-run Medicaid program. Instead, they contracted with a third-party transportation broker to schedule and manage rides for Medicaid beneficiaries. The state pays a fixed amount to brokers, and the broker manages the multi-million-dollar transportation program that typically includes taxis, wheelchair vans, and ambulances. The difference between what the state pays in a management fee and what is actually paid by the broker is then kept as an operating income by the broker, and in this case, it's MTM, which has the contract. The mindset here, basically what we believe, is to build efficiency in the program and to reduce waste and overspending for transportation. And some numbers that were shared with us by legislator Senator Tiffany, apparently in 2015 and 16, the total Medicaid payments made for emergency medical transportation was right around $26 million. And of this total, $11 million were fee-for-service and $15 million paid by health maintenance organizations. Today, we might find a little bit more information out about non-emergency transportation and what that amount totaled. Ambulance services, as you know, haven't seen a bump in Medicaid base rate for about 10 years now. And back then, 10 years or so ago, it was about 1%. So it was a pretty minimal increase. And since then, there hasn't been any increases. The base rate is still $94 for a basic life support transport. And so we don't see any increases on the horizon either. Today's program will run about 30 minutes and is sponsored by Stark Collection Agency and McNeil & Company. So we thank them for their support. Now, MTM is the state's Medicaid transportation broker, and they manage non-emergency medical transportation on behalf of the state and its beneficiaries. Following our quick break here, we'll be introducing and welcoming to the program MTM General Manager Danielle Dale and Transportation Manager Chris Belling. You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin, and our program will continue after these brief messages. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Ambulance Services Insurance Program, or ASIP, by McNeil & Company, offers specialized insurance for today's ambulance services. ASIP has consistently led the industry, developing a deeper understanding of their clients' challenges and opportunities more than any other provider. McNeil & Company has a dedicated risk management team and an in-house claims staff that work diligently on their clients' behalf to help ambulance companies operate more safely and avoid catastrophic losses. As other programs and carriers have come and gone, McNeil & Company has maintained a stable offering and leveraged their expertise to provide education and training programs that add value to their policies. You can learn more by visiting McNeil & Company's website at www.asip.com. That's www.asip.com. The fine art of successful ambulance billing and collections begins with the Stark Agency, located in Madison. The Stark Agency provides full-service debt collection, specializing in EMS and ambulance patient billing. They're also experts in the Wisconsin Offset Trip Program, a new option for ambulance services. For more information, call 877-274-7764. That number again, 877-274-7764. The Stark Agency is accredited by the Better Business Bureau and a member of the Wisconsin Collectors Association.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad, or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Dan Williams, Patrick Ryan, and Larry Knuth. I'm also pleased to bring into our program MTM General Manager Danielle Dale and Transportation Manager Chris Belling. Welcome.
Thank you.
Morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for being a part of the program. MTM has some big involvement with ambulance services, obviously, being the entity that schedules rides and pays the ambulance bills and has a lot of correspondence with the industry. And I know that your group has done this for a few years now, and we really appreciate you being on the program to answer some of our questions and to create that discussion that's so important. I know Larry, Dan, and Patrick are quite closely involved with MTM and some recent discussions we've had from the State Association perspective with you, and so we appreciate this as the conversation moves forward. To help our audience, Danielle and Chris, kind of get their arms around MTM and its place with the brokering business and scheduling transportation rides for beneficiaries, would you mind giving us an overview of MTM and what it does?
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks again for inviting us here on this kind of icy, snowy, wintry mix morning that we've all come to love living in the state of Wisconsin. So hopefully we'll warm some things up as we talk about what MTM does. So as Joe mentioned, MTM took over management of the NEMT program here in the state of Wisconsin on August 1st of 2011. 2013. I'm already rewinding myself, trying to act like we've been here longer than we have. Time just really flies. So August 1st, 2013, we took over management of the program from LogisticCare, who was the prior NEMT broker. And for those of you who aren't familiar, although I'm sure most of you are, you know, we do act as a third-party broker, meaning that we do not provide transportation services ourselves. Instead, we help arrange services for eligible NEMT members. Here in the state of Wisconsin, there are just shy of 1 million individuals who are eligible to receive NEMT services through MTM. As many of you know, there are actually more individuals who are eligible for Medicaid. Those members actually get their NEMT services through other DHS programs, such as family care or through nursing homes or other entities. But we're responsible for just under 1 million of that population. In terms of, you know, what we do here, we're based, headquartered out of St. Louis, Missouri, but we do have our own office here in the state of Wisconsin in Madison. So we're very pleased. You know, we started up the Wisconsin office back when we won the contract. We have about 120 people here in the state of Wisconsin who actually service this program for MTM. We have about 8 management level staff, one of which is Chris Bayling, who is our senior manager of transportation, who is here with me today. But we also have a fully functional call center of about 70 plus reps who actually intake calls. So those are requests that members, facilities, hospitals, others are making to utilize MTM services. And we do take just shy of 100,000 calls here every month. So there is quite a bit of volume going through here in our call center every day. On average, you know, members are required to wait less than 4 minutes in order for MTM to answer the call, but we've been averaging much lower than that, right around the 2-minute mark for most of 2016. In terms of the actual services we provide, we do have a full network staff here that's led by Chris. We have 4 provider reps underneath him. We're currently recruiting for a 5th provider rep. Many of you probably are familiar with the name Barb Ford. She is currently our ambulance liaison, but we're hoping we're going to get some more individuals here involved throughout 2017. Actually working with you guys more at a local level who can kind of help troubleshoot and work through some of the bumps that you guys may experience. So that's something that we're looking forward to having just more staff available for you guys directly for the ambulance providers in 2017. As Joe mentioned, we do provide a wide range of services. So we do provide, of course, the ambulance, the ALS, BLS, non-emergent transport, which you guys, of course, are most interested in. We do also arrange ambulatory, bus, mass transit, stretcher, wheelchair vehicles, as well as we do have a gas mileage reimbursement program for members who are eligible to drive themselves or have, you know, family members or friends who are able to drive them. MTM is able to reimburse them 24 cents per mile for those services. So a quick snapshot kind of what the program looked like 3 years ago versus what it looks like now. When we started in August of 2013, MTM was running right around 200,000 rides every month. Today, wrapping up 2016, moving into 2017, we're performing just over 300,000 rides per month. So ridership has increased over the past 3 years by almost 100,000 trips, which we're, of course, very excited about. In terms of ambulance, that has also increased over the past 3 years. So looking back again to 2013, those first few months we were here, we were seeing anywhere between 200 to 400 ALS and BLS trips you know, combined in any given month. Today, that has increased actually quite a bit. We're doing between 1,100 and 1,200 ALS, BLS combined trips per month. The majority of those, of course, are BLS services, so about three-fourths of those fall into that BLS category. One of the things that we currently get questions on is the, you know, requirements to receive those ambulance services. And I know those of you on the call are probably most interested in that. So I'm going to talk about that quite at length just to kind of clarify what it is we do, you know, what we're looking for, how do you guys get those paid for? Because at the end of the day, I know that's what you guys are most concerned about as you, you know, try to run your business. So with ambulance, it actually works a little bit differently than the rest of our services do. For all of the other transportation modes that we discussed, members or their facilities or their representatives are required to call MTM, and MTM then schedules that ride with a provider for them. Ambulance can also work that way. That's something that is available for members or facilities to do. However, as most of you know, we also have the post-authorization process for ambulance providers, and that is unique to ambulance providers. No other provider is able to do that with MTM. So as many of you know, I know we've talked at length with several of you about the two-day post-op rule. So what that means, just in a nutshell, for those of you who aren't familiar, is hospitals are allowed through the NEMT contract currently to call you guys directly for either a hospital discharge or a hospital-to-hospital transfer. And that's important. Those are really the only two categories of services that are allowed to be called to you guys directly. All of the others do need to come through us through pre-authorization for MTM to assign. So if members are calling you, you know, directly from their home, you know, to go to the doctor, those are trips that you would need to refer them back to NEMT or to MTM to schedule, because they do not fall within that post-authorization rule. So as I mentioned, hospitals are allowed to call you guys directly, and the only requirement for that then for you guys is that you submit that information to us within 2 business days of the actual date of transport. So that's how you get your post-authorization claim number. I'm happy to say that here in late 2016, we actually moved our post-authorization ambulance team for Wisconsin out of our corporate office in St. Louis and actually here to our local Madison office. And we found that that seems to be working a lot better from you guys. We did get feedback earlier in the year from Patrick and others, some frustrations you guys were experiencing, where you guys were, of course, doing your best to comply within that two-day rule, and there could be a misspelling, you know, of an individual's name. So the example I always use, my name is Danielle. And instead of submitting Danielle, you guys may submit the name Daniel, which is, of course, not my name. That's my father's name, so I like when people don't call me that. But that's a good, you know, sort of easing example to show where, you know, you've gotten the member's name misspelled. So when we look into the system, of course, Daniel is not eligible. But when we send that back to you, you guys are able to say, oh, oops, you know, there was a typo, or maybe the information, you know, didn't come through clearly that you got from the hospital. And, you know, one of the complaints we got from you guys was we really should be able to correct that to say Danielle. I mean, it's clear that we did transport this eligible member. You know, we had everything else. We contacted you within 2 days. Can't we correct that misspelling? And I totally agree with you guys, and that's, you know, one of the things that as we've been able to move that record keeping here in-house, as a general manager, I'm actually able to step in and override that, where in the past I had a lot less flexibility doing that with staff who are outside of our office. One of the other things that we have cleared up recently is for retroactively eligible members. So prior to earlier this year, there was not a process for when you guys were transporting members who then became retroactively eligible to submit a claim to MTM. And that was something that we did speak with, again, Patrick about, you know, on behalf of the PAW organization as something that you guys wanted to correct. And we were able to work with DHS. So now if that ever comes up where you guys have found that you, you know, transported someone, even if we denied it originally because they weren't eligible, if they become retroactively eligible, we now are able to cover that, which I think is a good win for both sides. So just to talk a little bit about the criteria that needs to be met in order for that direct call policy to work. For hospital-to-hospital transfers, things that we look for to make sure that it's actually a covered NEMT service is the patient really does need to require a different level of care. So essentially what that means is that the original facility cannot meet the patient's medical needs, and they have to be transferred to another facility in order to meet those. It does need to be based on a medical reason. So if a member is requesting to be transported to another facility for patient preference, you know, maybe they have family members in that area that they'd like to be close to. Those are ones that do not meet the criteria of what I've covered, ambulance, hospital-to-hospital transport services. And that is, you know, information that, of course, we get from DHS on what's allowable. So that's not MTM's rule. That's something that DHS actually, you know, requires in order for that to be billable to the Medicaid program. For hospital discharge services, you know, what we're looking for is that a BLS or an ALS level of care is actually needed. So that patient actually requires transport maybe in a supine position, or, you know, some other sort of needs, you know, monitoring, oxygen, other things that an ambulance can provide that a cab or some other entity could not provide. And for those life support services, really we are looking at DHS admin code. So a lot of times many of you in your fact sheet that you send over us to request that initial transport, you'll kind of include that justification there of why an ambulance call was necessary. One thing to note is when you make that request within that 2 business days, all you're getting at that point, of course, is a claim number. So that's the opportunity for you to claim for payment later. You do have up until a year afterwards to then actually make that claim, to submit your 1500 form. And that's, too, where we're going to look again at what actually was administered or required during that transport in order to make that level of care necessary. Now, one of the questions we've gotten is, you know, what if it doesn't meet ALS or BLS? And we find that out after the fact. In those instances, we've actually been able to work with DHS, and we're able to classify that as a stretcher trip. Now, what that means for you guys in terms of billing purposes is really no difference. You know, when that happens, we do continue to just pay you at the BLS rate, or if you have a stretcher rate in your contract with MTM, alternatively, we would pay that. However, it's just something that as DHS looks to present information to the public, they like it classified as stretcher since it didn't quite meet that ALS or BLS criteria. But at the end of the day, we're not denying those services because it fell into the stretcher category. And I know that's been something that has been a question that people have asked, so happy to share that with you guys as well. Kind of looking through some of the other talking points that Joe shared with us, so we've kind of touched a little bit on the billing, you know, what do we look for? We really are looking at back at that code. So in terms of what emergent or non-emergent ambulance calls are covered, so just to be clear, we do not cover anything that is emergent. So unfortunately, you know, if you do get a call originating from a 911 call and it turns out to not be covered by them, we're unable to cover that. And the reason is, all non-emergent ambulance calls have to come through us through pre-auth or to MTM directly to schedule unless, again, it meets that hospital-to-hospital transfer or that hospital discharge. So I know that's something there have been a few questions on. Sometimes that leaves ambulance providers kind of in a hard spot if Medicaid then denies your emergent claim. And I think that's something maybe we can work with DHS on, you know, to make sure that you guys aren't put in a pickle there with the billing. To maybe clarify that as we move forward with the MTM contract. One of the things I'm happy to mention, so I did say that we had moved our in-house ambulance post-authorization team here to the Wisconsin office, and many of you have asked the question, you know, how do I get in contact with MTM? You know, I don't like faxing, you know, that's kind of a dinosaur, or, you know, it takes a lot of time. Sometimes the fax doesn't go through either on your end or our end. You know, is there a better way for us to communicate with MTM? And we actually do have an email that you guys can communicate with us through, and that is a very easy way that you guys can make that request for that post-op claim within that 2 business days. And we did recently request a Wisconsin-specific post-authorization email account, which comes to our local office here. And so I know Patrick has a copy of that email. He might be able to maybe twist your arm, Patrick, send it out to the group afterwards. But for those of you who are quick with a pen, the new email address is wipostauth@mtm-inc.net. It used to be postauthorizationtransportation@mtm-inc.net. For those of you who have that saved, it will actually still route now to this new email address. They go to the same inbox. So for those of you who have it saved as a favorite and don't want to rewrite it, you know, feel free to use that old email address. But what we found was the old address was just so long that many of you, you know, like myself, were having typos, you know, as you were trying to send it, and that got really frustrating. So we've attempted to kind of streamline that email address to help with you guys. And we do actually have an ambulance appeals email address as well. So that's a question I get a lot when I go out and talk to folks is, you know, MTM may have denied my original claim while I hear I have some more information, or I want to go through the appeals process because now I've gotten the information, you know, from the hospital or whoever, which now covers this. Is there a way to do that? And we do have an appeals email as well, which is ambulanceappeals@mtm-inc.net. So I always say, you know, you can contact Barb, you can contact your local rep, but really going through that WI post op at mtm-inc.net email address is the best way to reach us. That goes directly to the individuals who are reviewing your post-authorization request. And the great thing is, you know, now that they're here in my office, when they have questions about, hey, Danielle, can I get an exception to this? Is this something that, you know, DHS would cover? We're actually able to resolve that a lot quicker because they're able to just actually literally walk over to my office now and get that done. So I, from my perspective, believe that that's working much better than it was in the past, and I hope you guys are experiencing, you know, the same sort of impact. One of the things I will mention is, you know, I talked quite a bit about the hospital discharge requirements. For those of you who are interested, we actually do have a fact sheet out on the MTM Wisconsin webpage that kind of outlines what's required in order for these services to be met. And I'm more than happy to send the link to that, you know, either through Joe or Patrick or others to distribute to the group, because I do think, you know, that's kind of a helpful, just kind of at a glance, one sheet document that you guys can reference. It was actually designed for hospitals and healthcare facilities. So one of the requests we got from your group earlier in the year was, you know, can you actually educate the hospitals to make sure that they're following the process correctly? Because a lot of times they may be the people who are calling you, you know, inappropriately for those things, or they may be requesting the hospital transfer that doesn't meet those requirements. So actually the last month we've had our ETO, our Education Training and Outreach Coordinator, Dana Schultz, as well as Barb Ford, going out to a number of hospitals and facilities to educate them on this process. So the document was intended for that sort of audience, but I believe that it would actually be beneficial for you guys to reference as well, so you're able to see what was shared with them as you work with those partners. And then one of the other things that I promise we are working on, although it's been a little bit slow going, is we have been working on that ambulance provider handbook. I know it seems to be working at a snail's pace, so we are continuing to work at that. We have, of course, worked with DHS as well on that to make sure that everything that we're saying is accurate, especially as it relates to Wisconsin policy. So I am hoping that that will hit the street here first quarter. So I know it's right at 9:29. Joe, you told me we have it booked for a little bit over, you know, in case we wanted to go over. So I don't know if there are any questions anyone on the phone would kind of like to ask us at this point. I know we've talked a lot. I'm a talker. I'm a lawyer by trade, so I like to talk. If you let me talk, I'll talk all day. But I'd like to turn it over to you guys and see if there's anything burning that you guys would like to ask us.
Sure. Appreciate that very much, Danielle. And we appreciate the information. You covered quite a bit of information there, some great detail. for those that aren't familiar with this or maybe have worked slightly with MTM, that was a great, great overview. A lot of good information shared there. I know Patrick and Larry and their operations work very closely with MTM just because of the number of members that they are transporting. And you referenced that they're currently today between 1,100 and 1,200 ALS or BLS transports by ambulance services here in Wisconsin. So the number has dramatically increased over the last couple years that you've managed the agreement. But let me toss it over to Patrick and Larry. They might have something more specific. But go ahead, gentlemen.
Sure.
Thanks, Joe. Danielle, I have to say that is the best overview we've been given since this NEMT process started, before MTM came on board. So very appreciative of that. I think I'd like to commend Dana and Larry and some others that have, you know, we've all worked cooperatively to try to get to this point. So really, really thank you. And this is, you know, in a nutshell, that's kind of what we're looking for at this point in time. You know, I think we'll continue to try to tie up some loose ends. We're always going to have some issues in terms of denials and things that I think on a service by service basis we'll need to work with MTM. But what you provided us today is a very valuable tool. I guess the only thing I'd really add really is that, you know, as we talked, we met with MTM back about 6 weeks ago, Dana and I, and we look for the opportunity as this new contract, you know, is on the horizon of working together. I think if we're working together, we can make better positive change in the system as we talk with DHS. So again, just kind of reiterating that we, I think, PAW as an organization looks forward to doing that to help this process become better for everyone. Then I'll turn it back over to yourself or if anyone else has some questions, but thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that feedback. You know, I never quite know what to present when I talk to people, you know, what's too much detail, what's not enough. So appreciate the kind words and feedback there.
Larry or Dan, do you have anything?
Yeah, this is Larry. Danielle, you're familiar with the Transportation Advisory Council that the DHS put together a few years ago when there were a myriad of issues with their your predecessor broker. However, I've attended those, and about 99% of the content is really focused around wheelchair. Is there any thought or discussion of creating a ambulance transportation advisory council, or if something that isn't formalized by DHS, maybe that's something that the PAW organization could establish with you in your organization? Because I think education, although, and I agree with Patrick, this is a great overview that you gave this morning, but I think ongoing, something we maybe should discuss or think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Transportation Advisory Council, so DHS, you know, owns that, for lack of a better term. And I agree, most of what we talk about, of course, is geared more towards, you know, the commentary or SMB or even the actual, like, member advocate group. It's really not geared too much towards ambulance providers. I don't know if DHS would be willing to, you know, establish one geared more towards ambulance providers, but I can certainly say, you know, Chris and I are more than happy to come out, partner with PAW, with others, you know, either through these blog programs, or I know you guys have, you know, on-site, you know, board meetings, things like that. I mean, feel free to hit us up anytime, because we do want to partner with you guys, and I love talking about what it is that we do and how we can work better together. So, you know, any opportunities you have, we're more than happy to participate in.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Danielle and Larry. Did you have anything, Dan?
No, I think the guys covered it real well, and it was a great presentation by Danielle.
All right, very good. We do have listeners on the phone. If you do have a question, please press number one on your keypad, and in the time remaining, we'd be happy to bring you into the program. Most definitely, if you have a question, again, number one on your phone keypad. Chris, we haven't heard from you. I wanted to make sure that we heard your voice. Are you there, and do you have some things to share with us also?
Yeah, good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Nice to have you with us as well.
Great to be here. Just to kind of follow up, we were talking about the helping with more local presence with the ambulance providers. So right now, Barb pretty much covers the entire state, and her area of responsibility for her other duties kind of keep her on the western half of the state. So one of the things that we're working on as we speak is we've redefined our roles, and we've incorporated a regional operation for my transportation provider crew, and they're all going to be trained in this, and you know, obviously Barb's going to help us out, and but then you're going to have a regional person for the parts of the state. So essentially the state's going to be split up into four regions, northeast, northwest, southwest, and southeast, and you'll have a provider there. So obviously I could be the center point of contact if you had anything where you didn't know where to go with it, but they will they'll get to know the providers in their regions and do some outreach and get a little FaceTime with them and stuff. So I'm hoping you'll feel a little more attention and feel a little more included and engaged in the program this way.
Okay, that'd be excellent. Thank you very much for sharing that, Chris. We appreciate it. Danielle, I guess I had one other question for you, more or less kind of to wrap things up in a way too, but to make sure that our ambulance providers out there have a well-defined system. Of course, in this work, you work with volunteers, you work with people who are part-time, full-time. There's kind of a whole cadre of people that participate in delivering emergency medical care throughout the state. But I think the important thing is to have things written out for instructions, details, things to follow, especially with a two-day rule that's not a lot of time to get the run submitted for post-authorization. What are some of the things that you're seeing in your office from a billing standpoint? A run has happened. They've submitted the information. Are there some errors, coding problems, things like that that you're noticing that we, through this program, can recommend to our providers out there? Here's something, if you're having an issue, you need to pay some more attention to or better define.
So the biggest obstacle that we run into is, of course, just having people submit within that 2 business day requirement. So, you know, many of you have said, you know, it's hard for us to know when we get to the hospital whether or not the member we're transporting is actually eligible through MTM. And in many cases, you know, they could be dual eligible through, you know, private care or other entities. And what I would say to that, and I know it's a little bit burdensome, is if you have any hesitation, submit the claim to us, you know, submit that request. And I think using the email address is really a best practice from my perspective, because you're able to get an immediate, you know, response back from MTM. There is an auto reply that goes back when you send that. So you'll have confidence that it came back to us and kind of a paper trail that if we were ever to say, hey, you didn't get it, you know, you can show that right to us, you know, as evidence that you've submitted it. So I certainly would say that's the best practice, you know, as opposed to doing the fax or calling it in. You're welcome to do either. I know in this day and age, as we've moved more technology, you know, I like that auto confirmation that we're able to provide you guys now. So I would certainly recommend that. The team does try to turn around the claims numbers to you guys within, you know, a few business days. We like to shoot for, you know, just 2 or 3. Sometimes we get backed up a little bit, so have patience. But we all are, of course, you know, responding to all of them. And if there's ever anything that's gone missing, feel free to, you know, reply back to that email as well. But I think the big thing is, if you have any doubt if the person is eligible, submit it. You know, the worst that can happen is that we tell you, no, you know, it wasn't eligible. What's the actual worst thing that could happen would be for it to have been an eligible claim that you guys didn't submit, and now you've missed the opportunity for payment. So don't ever feel, and I'm sure you won't, bad about the administrative burden you're putting on us by submitting these requests, because, you know, we do want to pay you. We are, of course, confined with the rules. DHS does audit us. If we start to make exceptions, you know, it goes down the rabbit hole with them that, you know, no one really wants to go down. So I would say, you know, as a default, submit it. And, you know, the worst we can do is say no, but what's far worse is for you guys to have not submitted it and have lost that opportunity.
Right. Very good. Thank you for pointing that out. We do have a question from a caller calling in from area code 920. I've gone ahead and activated your phone. Go ahead with your question, please.
Hi, this is Belinda at Gold Cross Ambulance.
Hi, Belinda. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for being on our program.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate you listening. Go ahead, please.
Regarding appeal rights, what kind of appeal rights do we have if we submit for a post-op and we have the address incorrect, but we didn't realize that at the time, so we didn't get that denial until, like, a few weeks later? We took a patient from one of the Valley hospitals to Milwaukee Children's, and we had the street address wrong.
Yep, so that is something you absolutely can appeal, and that's something, you know, I gave the example earlier of the misspelled name. We do get, you know, the wrong street address or the wrong number or whatever quite frequently as well. So that's something, you know, just shoot it to that ambulance appeals and we're able to look at it, you know, as long as you have documentation that, in fact, the address you're submitting, you know, is a legitimate facility, we're able to correct that and pay that.
Okay. And then another question regarding the retroactive patients.
Yep.
So we can send that in as soon as we find out they were retroactive, or do we have to at least have that first denial that they didn't have coverage?
You do not have to have an initial denial on that. So you can send it in as soon as, you know, you get wind of the fact that they've been made retroactively eligible. And really, you know, what we need in that instance is the same thing you would have submitted, you know, had you known that they were eligible right away. So just kind of the initial intake information regarding, you know, who the member is, their member detail, as well as the address and level of service that you're transporting on, if you know that. So no denial is necessary for the retro eligible. You're able to just submit it. It is helpful. Let me say, if that's what you're doing, that you tell us that's what you're doing, so we don't think, you know, why are you submitting a claim that's 6 months old? And that way people don't get confused and think, oh, well, this is denied for two business days. So I will say that, you know, if you're submitting one for a member who's retroactively eligible, please try to indicate that so that, you know, we're not trying to, you know, run around in circles to figure out why it is you're submitting to us something so late.
Okay, thanks. Is there a time frame as far as to get that? So we didn't find out that they were retroactive until today, but we transported them, you know, 2 months ago.
But no, there is no deadline at the moment. So DHS has not established any sort of cutoff point for that.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Thank you for your excellent question. We appreciate you listening to the program today. Danielle and Chris, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap things up?
So just when we go into the regional responsibilities, I'll probably reach out to Patrick to let him know who's going to be responsible for where, so you can get it out to your members with the contact information.
Excellent. We appreciate that very much, Chris. We'd be happy to share that information on your behalf.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Danielle, anything else?
No, I just, again, want to thank you guys for inviting us to participate. Like I said, I like being able to get together with the groups that, you know, we work with. I love working with ambulance providers because you guys do provide such a higher quality of service. You know, we do, one thing I didn't mention is we track complaints on providers, and by far ambulance providers get the fewest complaints by members. So, you know, from that perspective, you know, I love working with you guys. You do provide a high quality of service. So having this open dialogue and continued partnership is something that I very much appreciate.
And we appreciate it also. And we know there's some things to work on moving forward, but we have a good base of information, a good base of what's established. But we'll look to the future. Thank you very much. And we sure welcome you back at a future time. If there's any updates, like Chris had mentioned, with the regional work that's going to be done here soon. So we sure invite you back at a future point in time to update us with any of that information and other things as we move forward. Thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, Patrick, Larry, and Dan, anything else before we wrap things up?
No, that was a great show. I think that's one of the more vital pieces of information that we've been able to provide to our members in a while. We've, you know, all our shows are great, but this was a, you know, firsthand, here's exactly what you need to know, and I think a real great gateway for those that are still unfamiliar with the process. Now they have a way to really get tapped into this, because it is very important. I mean, we can't get paid if we don't follow the procedure. So nice job.
Right. Very good. We appreciate their information. Very detailed. And this podcast, of course, will be posted on the Paul website. Feel free to share it with those that you feel would benefit from it. If you want to use it as a part of a staff meeting or something like that with all of your EMTs and first responders. Dan or Larry, anything else?
This is Dan. I don't have anything else. I think, again, I would echo what Patrick said. It was a great show today, and like he says, all our shows are good, but I think this is a level of information we haven't received before, so I think it's really a great, great opportunity for everybody to hear that.
This is Larry. I think the important fact is that MTM moving to Madison away from the St. Louis was a big step, and it's paying dividends, and today is one of those.
Very good. Excellent points. Well, thank you very much for listening today. This has been EMS Live in Wisconsin. Our next program is Tuesday, January 24th, starting at 9 o'clock. We don't have a topic set up yet, but we surely will shortly. You can refer to the PAW website at paaw.us for the topic. We'll have it listed on our homepage. The program is streamed live via the phone and internet the second and fourth Tuesday every month. And today's program, of course, was recorded, and you can find the playback at the PAW website, paaw.us. We appreciate you being with us today, and we look forward to having our next program on January 24th. On behalf of the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, this is Joe Cavelli with Larry Knuth, Dan Williams, and Patrick Ryan. Have a good day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.